Welcome to Parent Talk, the show for parents by parents, brought to you by the India Community Center. I'm your host, Vidya. As always, this is a live show and the call-in number is 510-770-1550. Parenting can be a tough job for anyone, but being the parent of a child with special needs can be uniquely challenging both emotionally and physically. What are these challenges and how can we help each other with these tough parenting issues? That's our topic for today. If you have a child with special needs or you know someone who is the parent of a child with special needs and have a thought to share, do call in at 510-770-1550. You can also listen live at radiozindagi.com. With me in the studio are Shriya Shah and Nandini Minocha. Welcome, Shriya and Nandini.
Thank you. Thank you so much, Nandini, thank you so much, Priya, for having me today.
Shriya, can you tell us a little bit about your situation?
Definitely, Vidya. I have an almost 9.5-year-old son. His name is Soham. Mm-hmm. And he was diagnosed when he was 10 months old with a neuromuscular condition called spinal muscular atrophy. Mm-hmm. And that started my journey with parenting a child with special needs.
Nandini, what about you?
Hi, Vidya. I have an 18-year-old boy. He was diagnosed with autism at 4 years old. So I've been in the field of parenting a special needs child for a really long time.
So looking back, did you know in that moment when your child was diagnosed what being the parent of a special needs kid was going to be like? What was your biggest surprise? Nandini, you can take that first.
No, I had no clue. I actually had no idea what autism was. His diagnosis happened back in 1998. So mm-hmm. at the time, it wasn't as well known as it is today. At the time, I had a sense of relief that people understood what it was, mm-hmm. or there was a doctor who was telling me what it was. He was labeling it. And so I had this false sense of security that somehow, now that I know what it is, I'm going to be able to fix it or I'm going to be able to solve the problem. But if you know anything about autism, unfortunately, even today, doctors don't know the cause or they don't know the cure. So it's been a long journey, but I don't think I had any clue what was in store for me.
What about you, Shriya?
When we got the diagnosis, we had no clue. We had never heard of anything like spinal muscular atrophy, never seen anybody in a wheelchair. So we were clueless, and I was devastated. And, I just thought that there was nothing, you know, that going forward it's going to be all dark and bleak and really bad.
So, when your child was diagnosed, were you advised on what your options were? Did you feel that you had a support system, at least from the medical community, in place?
Yes. When we started the journey, we were told about, you know, from the doctors, from the therapists, from parents of other kids with disability. We found out a lot about resources in the community and the services available in the community. And slowly we got connected with a lot of organizations like GINA, Parents Helping Parents.
We'll get to that, certainly. Mm-hmm. And what about you, Nandini? At that time, did you have a sense, did you have a sense of what were the options available to you in terms of the care and development of your child?
Well, the way they diagnose autism, it's sort of a behavioral diagnosis. So you look at behavioral markers. If you look at a child with autism physically, you won't be able to say there's anything wrong with him. Mm-hmm. And so what we really got from the doctors was a label. We got a few books that they told us to read about autism, how to treat it, certain tests that they wanted us to do, you know, to just remove all kinds of genetic issues that might be there. And essentially, then we were told that our best bet was the school system. Mm-hmm. Because for autism, the only thing that you can do is intense behavioral therapy and the right kind of education.
Do you think things are different 18 years later?
I would hope so. I think there's a lot of difference now because I think parents are extremely aware. I don't know if you know that on March 29th, the latest numbers for autism came out, mm-hmm. and the CDC, and these are official numbers, says that one out of every 88 child is now diagnosed with autism. Mm-hmm. And we're talking about, this is a study they did for 8-year-olds. So So obviously it's a very different field out there. People get information. I think doctors are more geared towards giving information as well. And I think that because of the number and scope of this disability now, I think there are lots of parents out there who, and you have a lot of online resources which were not there. So it's, I think, the best resource for a parent who gets a diagnosis of autism today is probably other parents and other organizations like Autism Speaks. And
certainly there's a lot of information out there to get educated.
Yeah.
And also probably the feeling that you're not alone, yes, since it's now becoming so ubiquitous.
You know, it's funny that there's that thing about the road less traveled. People talk about the road less traveled. I feel like now it's not.
Right.
It's sad, but there are just too many children getting this diagnosis, and it's not the experience. I think it's a mainstream experience now. If you don't have a child, you have a friend who has a child, you have a colleague who has a child, you have a cousin who has a problem.
Mm-hmm.
I think... Sadly,
that is the case. And what about you, Shia? Have things changed in your world since you first got the diagnosis? Is it is there more information for parents out there today? Is there more support available?
Definitely. Things have changed for better in the last 9-10 years, and there is a lot more support available. Like Nandini was saying, parents are more aware. You know, they are more ready to accept the challenge and going forward and facing it, mm-hmm, trying to find resources for their child early on. And there are resources and a lot of support available. So just getting connected and, taking advantage of all these information, support, and resources is the key.
Right. So let's take a quick break. And when we get back, we'll talk a little more about the family dynamics and the support systems that are available and needed for kids with special needs for the parents as well. Welcome back to Parent Talk. I'm your host, Vidya. Today, we are talking about the challenges of parenting a child with special needs. In the studio with me today are Shia Shah and Nandini Minocha. And before the break, we were talking about how when their children got diagnosed, they really didn't expect what was going to be their life from then on. And Shia, you said you had something to share about the biggest surprise that you had. Go ahead.
Definitely, Vidya. The biggest surprise for us and for me especially was the realization of the fact, or looking back now, I can tell you that when we started this journey, the future was so bleak and dark. I did not have a slightest clue or in my wildest dream think that we would be able to do so much with Soham, my son. I would be able to give him the most normal possible life possible,
mm-hmm,
and be able to adapt to the situation so well and expose him to so many different experiences of life. And that is the biggest surprise, because...
Well, it's a very positive.
Yes, it is positive. And when I look back, I really feel happy about it.
That's great. In this segment, we're going to be talking a little bit about the family dynamics involved with parenting a child with special needs. And I want to ask both of you, who's the primary caregiver in your family and why has the choice been made? Nandini, you want to take that?
Sure. In our house, it's been me. And I think in most Indian families, I noticed that it tends to be the mom. And that's not just Indian families. That's across the board. I think that just happens. I think women are naturally better caregivers. I think you see that with people who have Alzheimer's. You find their daughters taking care of them more than their sons.
Mm-hmm. Is it also a function that you were with a child in the earliest times? And
yeah, you have, as a mom, you have the instincts. I was the one who actually was sure there was something wrong before the doctor said something, before my husband could see, my mom could see. I knew something was wrong.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that as moms, you know, we naturally are, when the babies are small, we tend to bond more, and mm-hmm, I think that just becomes a natural consequence of that, because this is your child.
In your experience, have there been dads who have been caregivers?
Yes,
as well?
Yes, there are. In fact, we'll talk about Gina, and there are some phenomenal fathers. And I think that my husband as well, he's as my son has gotten older, I think he's gotten more and more engaged.
Mm-hmm.
I think just as normal children, you know, fathers tend to get involved a little later because they don't really know what to do with babies. But I think that in our house, it's been me more. And mm-hmm, what was the rest of your question?
Shia, what about you?
I
I cannot take the credit that I am the primary caregiver in our household, because we are a good team. My husband and I, we both are a great team. When he's out working during the day, I take on the role of the primary caregiver and manage all the therapies, homework, and all the challenges during the day. But he's always there. And, you know, if I have any, if I run into issues or if I need help, I call him and he's there. So I think we are a good team.
And certainly parenting a child with special needs tends to take a lot of effort and energy and input. So here's my next question for, to both of you, is what have you had to give up and what have you gained? So Shia, do you want to take that first?
Yes, I will take that one. And the list is long, what you had to give up, especially when you have a child who has a lot of physical and health needs. There is a lot of things that you need to give up. And to name a few, I think, first of all, is I have to give up my career, give up social life, like the social life that I thought was the normal. What else do I have to give up? And I think the
leisure
biggest... Leisure time is the key. And the biggest thing that bugs me, I think, about giving up is, you know, the ability to plan. Ability to plan in advance. And
that's
when I say
very
that...
insightful.
Yeah, when I say that, you know, like... we had a group of, like, for example, some of our friends are just, we're just chatting around, and then everybody says, let's meet up next Saturday afternoon and, you know, we'll go out, we'll do this activity, and everybody's in. And I'm the one who cannot jump in and say, yes, we'll be there next Saturday afternoon, because I don't know what the situation will be next Saturday afternoon, how Soham would be, how we would be.
Right.
So that simple ability to plan in advance is gone, and that I feel is a big thing.
Right.
And what I gained, that is also a very, very good question. And I think I the biggest thing I think I've gained from this experience is being able to appreciate Holland, and I'm going to talk a little bit about Welcome to Holland. Appreciate the beauty of Holland and the tulips and the Rembrandts in Holland. Adapt. I'm now able to adapt to any situation. You know, it doesn't get me, you know, upset or frustrated.
Right.
Just adapt to it, and just basically taking and you know, not taking anything for granted.
Right.
And when I'm saying, when I was just quoting Welcome to Holland, it's a beautiful poem by Emily Pearl Kingsley. And she has described her experiences raising a child with special needs. And I'm going to read only a part of it.
Okay. Go ahead.
And just when it's like when you're planning a baby, it's like you're planning a trip to Italy. So I'm going to start from there. When you're going to have a baby, it's like planning a fabulous vacation trip to Italy. You buy a bunch of guidebooks and make your wonderful plans. The Colosseum, the Michelangelo David, the gondolas in Venice. You may learn some handy phrases in Italian. It's all very exciting. After months of eager anticipation, the day finally arrives. And the stewardess comes in and says, "Welcome to Holland." "Holland, you say? What do you mean, Holland? I signed up for Italy. I'm supposed to be in Italy. All my life I've dreamed of going to Italy. But there is a change in the flight plan. They have landed in Holland, and there you must stay. The important thing is that you haven't been taken to a horrible, disgusting, filthy place full of famine and disease. It's just a different place. So you must go out and buy new guidebooks. And you must learn a whole new language. And you will meet a whole new group of people you would never have met. It's just a different place. It's slower paced than Italy. Less flashy than Italy. But after you've been there for a while, you catch your breath, you look around. And you begin to notice the Holland. You begin to notice that Holland has windmills, and Holland has tulips, or Holland even has Rembrandts. But everyone you know is busy coming and going
coming and going from Italy. And they're all bragging about what wonderful time they had there. For the rest of your life, you will say, yes, that's where I was supposed to go. That's what I had planned. And the pain of that will never, ever, ever, ever go away. But because the loss of the dream is a very significant loss. But if you're but here is what I like the best about the poem. But if you spend your life mourning the fact that you didn't go to Italy, you may never be free to enjoy the very special, the very lovely things about Holland.
I think that encapsulates parenting with special needs perfectly. Nandini, what about you? I want to ask you the same question. What did you gain? What did you lose?
Well, you know, when I while Shreya was talking, I was thinking about it. And the way I look at it is that I don't think I lost anything significant, honestly. I don't think I lost anything meaningful. Because what did I lose? Yes, I lost a career, just like Shreya said, but was it something that I really wanted? No.
Is it that you're redefining what was meaningful?
Maybe I'm rationalizing. But when I think about it, did I lose a life of superficial partying? Yes. But is that meaningful to me today? Or no. Did I lose vacations to Europe because my son can't fly in a plane? Yes. Do we enjoy going to Tahoe and, you know, having him ski? Do we enjoy going to LA because we can do road trips? Yes. So it may be rationalization, but I look at it, I feel like I gained, and this is something that I think a lot of people with special needs, parents with special needs, there's sort of an argument about it because people don't like to hear it because, you know, you don't want to hear people say that it's actually been good for you.
Right.
But in a way, I think I've gained so much because as a person, I've grown tremendously.
Mm-hmm. But was that a painful process is what I want to ask you. That
yes.
process of realization. Because
yes.
I'm sure both you and Shreya have gone through that path and said, I used to like this. Like she said, I wanted to go to Italy. But now you've come to Holland and you've said, okay, I like Holland. This is a good place.
Yeah, and I think maybe you know, like I said, I have an 18-year-old son. I have another son who's 14, who's neurotypical. So I've sort of seen, I've had my feet in both sides, both worlds.
Mm-hmm.
And so I can see.
What life would have been like had
I not had a child with special needs. Mm-hmm. And I wouldn't wish this on anybody because, yes, it's been a really hard journey. And I want to be honest about that.
Mm-hmm.
But what I want to say is that
if you find yourself in this situation,
you will get through it.
Mm-hmm.
You will learn an amazing amount. You will meet the most amazing parents and the most amazing educators. You will see so much positive in so many people that it might even, no, it's never going to be worth it because guess what? The child who's paying the price for it, I'm not paying the price for it. My child is paying the price for it. So it's never going to be worth it. I don't think it's ever worth going through bad experiences to grow as a human being. You hope that you would be able to do it, but that never happens. But what I'm trying to say is that it's a kind of a weird question to say, what did you lose and what did you gain? Because for me, I only gained what I lost.
It doesn't matter.
It doesn't matter because that was not my life path.
I want to ask you both about, on a slightly different note, about the stress this put on your marriage. Who did it? Because I'm assuming that even parenting a neurotypical child, a regular child, a child with no health issues, can be very, very challenging at times. And we've discussed many aspects of that in previous shows of Parent Talk. But definitely, I'm assuming that because of the sheer physical effort involved in bringing up a child with special needs, there must be so much stress involved in the parent, in the marriage. So did you have to go through that? Shreya, do you want to take that question?
Definitely. You know, like you said, Vidya, parenting a special needs child takes a huge toll on parents. And yeah, we are no different. So we have had to deal with stress and we have learned over the time how to deal with it. For us, you know, talking and communicating all the time is the key. You know, we talk about anything and everything with each other via, you know, text, phone is hard, but text or Skype, either way we are connected.
doing things together that we like, you know, spending some quality time with one another has helped us a lot. We like going out to eat in restaurants. We do that as much as possible. Watching TV shows that we both enjoy together, that is something we both like.
So do you have you had to like make an effort to make some special time together?
Definitely, yeah. You have to, and I think I would tell all the new parents who are dealing with this that you have to take time and make effort to, you know, put in a little bit more for, you know, put in time and effort in your relationship. The other day I was talking to a psychologist, a family and marriage therapist who was invited to speak at one of our lectures. And she had given a very, very good, you know, comparison. It's like when you, like, your partner is like a big, you know, she was comparing, like, there is a big, huge tree full of, you know, shade and has lots of shade. And, you know, you want to stand there and be under the shade when it's really hot or raining. And then but you never take time to water it. You never take time to water the tree. And you wish you're like, oh, okay, that's not my job. But then when there is a big storm or, you know, when it's really hot out there and you're trying to lean against the tree is going to fall apart. So you have to nurture it. You have to put in time.
I think those are words for any marriage, but probably definitely more true for parents who are doing this challenging thing together. Nandini, in your experience, have you seen marriages break up because of the stress, or has it brought people closer?
Well, just looking at percentages, I think that in the U.S., I think and I don't know the exact rate, but I know that the rate of divorce is 50% in regular marriage. I know that the rate of divorce of parents of special needs children is higher.
Oh, it is.
Mm-hmm. So, yes, it's true. But in our group, which is Gina.
And we'll get to that in our next segment, absolutely.
I haven't seen that specifically. I think that has something to do with our culture, where, you know, we work... We're sort of brought up to sort of stay married.
Right.
So, and I think that, and I can only speak from my personal experience, but I think that what it does is that, like Shreya said, it makes you a really strong team. You have to be a really strong team.
Right.
Because the challenges are intense, and the only other person who truly can handle your child as well as you can is your spouse.
That is so true. Because mm-hmm. nobody else can understand your experience as
right.
much as your spouse can.
And nobody other than your spouse can know your child so well. You know?
Exactly, exactly. Yeah, on that note, let's take another quick break. We have been talking to Shreya and Nandini about parenting kids with special needs. As always, our call-in number is 510-770-1550 if you want to call in and share your thoughts. We'll be back after the break. In this segment, I want to talk a little bit about the resources that are available to parents with special needs. I know, Nandini, you talked about Gina and Shreya about parents helping parents earlier. And I'd like both of you to speak a little bit about that. Nandini, can you share some light on Gina?
Yeah, so Gina is an organization in the Bay Area for parents of special needs kids from India or the Indian subcontinent. We do have actually people from Sri Lanka and from Pakistan as well. We have about 350 parents, maybe more now. That's sort of an old number, I think. And we have a center in Milpitas. The address is, I think it's 1510.
What's the website? I think I'm sure people know.
Gina, GEENA.org.
Right. And this is primarily a support group for the parents. Is that the primary role?
Support group for parents and kids.
And kids, okay.
So they have classes for children. They have sort of parties. We have birthday parties and things like that there. We have an annual event mm-hmm. once a year called Gina Yaha, which for us is going to be, I think, 26th of May this year.
Right.
And it's basically all performances by the children.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes you have moms and dads dancing as well, but essentially I'd say 95% of the performances are all by the kids. Mm-hmm. And this is an event. This year we're going to have it at the Jewish Community Center. Mm-hmm. And they sell tickets. So
I just want to mention this information again. This is Gina Yaha. It's an annual event. It's going to be on the 26th of May. And you can get more information at gina.org.
Mm-hmm. Correct.
Right? And I've been to these events before. And the bravery and courage shown by these kids is just amazing. So I would highly encourage listeners to go check out gina.org and see if they can make the time to attend this event. It's about 3 hours.
Yes, it's 3 hours, and they provide you dinner for their very cheap tickets.
Right.
And it's and they have a DJ at the end, and there's a whole lot of dancing.
Right.
So
it's a really fun event.
It's a fun event. Mm-hmm. And what I want to talk about this event is that, you know, children start to prepare for this event starting from like January.
Mm-hmm.
And we actually have a little play that the kids are doing this year. They have Bollywood dancing, which they have classes through the year, and so the children get to dance. And they have individual performances. They have even the MCs are children. Mm-hmm. Some of them are siblings. My younger son is going to be one of the MCs, along with some of the kids from Gina. So it's an
event.
What
did you get out of Gina?
What I got out of Gina is an amazing group of people, an amazing support group that I can always depend on.
Right.
Some really good friends, people who are living the life that I do.
Right, right.
And that's invaluable.
And Parents Helping Parents, Shriya, is also a very, very reputed organization. And what are the kind of services they provide?
Parents Helping Parents is also based here locally in the Bay Area in San Jose. And they provide services, basically whatever the child needs, whatever it takes to improve the life of a child with special needs of any age, of any diagnosis, and how by educating, informing, and supporting the parents, mm-hmm. or the caregivers.
So if a parent had a question, even if the parent did not have a child with special needs, but maybe thought that there was something about the children that they needed to be aware of, is Helping Parents a good place to go to just talk to a live human being who can direct them to the right place?
Definitely. I think even if they don't have they don't have a diagnosis and they're just suspecting something and they have questions where to go, PHP or Parents Helping Parents is the place to call, and their website is www.php.com, and there is always somebody Monday to Friday to 5 there available live to talk to you.
Yes.
And actually, for younger people who might think there is something going on with their kids, they can also go to the regional center.
Right.
Which is a government organization, and they will provide you free services for diagnosis and things like that. And they have an early start program, so for under 3-year-olds.
Right. So, listeners, that's something we did cover in an earlier Parent Talk show called Parent Talk Early Intervention. So if you go to indiacc.org/parenttalk and click through to the past shows, you'll find a recording of that, so you can get a little more information if you're a young parent and just getting some inkling that there may be some services that your child needs or some help the child needs, then that's a good show to go and look into to get some detailed information about the regional center and the early start program. And here we've given you two websites. That's gina.org, G-E-E-N-A.org, and php.com. That's Parents Helping Parents. Now, coming back to informal support, do you guys get support from your extended family for with help in parenting your child?
Well, you know, we're in the U.S. and my extended family's in India, but we started our journey in India.
Right.
So I think I feel like my mother, yeah, she got it once we told her something was wrong, and she sort of helped as much as she could. But my in-laws actually could not comprehend it.
It's something very new to the Indian psyche.
And this is in the 90s.
Right.
So they didn't quite understand it. I think they understand it more now. We have support, again, our primary support is Gina and some close friends that we have here. Our family is too far. But I think that if they were around, certainly we would have had support from them.
So what about friends? And also at this point, I want to ask that question about, you know, both of you have children who, when you take them out in public, will exhibit certain, they'll need certain help and they'll exhibit certain behaviors. And there's always this question of how do people who are not familiar with the condition, how do they respond? And I know, Nandini, you wrote an article called Autism Etiquette, where you wanted to lay out what other people approaching you should take into account and understand about your child's specific needs. And similarly, Shreya, I would like to ask you too. So do you want to take that first on, you know, what would you expect from strangers and well-wishers?
Right. That's a very good question. And I think the first thing I would like, you know, friends, relatives, well-wishers, whoever is there, whoever is involved or meets us, to know that, you know, we are not looking for sympathy. We means not our child, not us.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we are trying to deal with this situation as normally as we can.
Right.
And we need your help and support to do this.
Right.
And it would be simple as, very simple, you know, if you're planning, if the friends or relatives or they're planning a get-together, they would just take a few extra minutes to think about, you know, how they're going to accommodate my child who has...
Would asking you be the right thing to do?
Would be great if they don't know. But they take the time to ask us in advance, you know, that, you know, we would love to have your son with at the party. How can we make it work the best? Because what it ends up is every time we are invited to any gatherings and we take him with us, we're always trying to last, you know, at the last moment I'm rushing and trying to adapt to that situation, to that party, to make it work for everybody.
Right.
And it's just very stressful. So if we were told in advance or asked in advance, and just the thought that they would take the time to, you know, understand and include us, just by even calling and asking us in advance, that would be great.
That would be great. What about you, Nandini?
Well, I think that, you know, autism is specific. And I mean, your son, Shreya, is in a wheelchair, so it's very evident to everybody. Autism has its unique challenges that our children look normal. And so oftentimes you'll find in the community there's a child who's acting out, maybe lying on the floor, depending on if he's young, or screaming, shouting, hitting, whatever. And I think given that there are so many children with autism today, I think what people need to do is sort of build that into their, when they see something, have an expectation there may be something going on with that child.
Right.
And
don't put it down to bad parenting.
Mm-hmm. Lay off on the judgment mm-hmm. on those parents. I think that's important because those parents are probably doing their best in a pretty bad situation right now.
Mm-hmm.
So if you find yourself in a situation, see how you can help.
How can they help? Yeah.
Is
it okay to approach you and say, can I help? Or is it something that you'd consider intrusive?
No, I think one is don't stare. Don't stare at that family. Don't look away. Once you've stared in a sort of, you know, just don't make them feel uncomfortable is what I'm saying. Yes, if you want to approach them, say, is there anything I can do? Just keep a smile on your face. Just if you need to walk past them, that's fine. Just don't make a big deal about it. Don't make a judgment mm-hmm. because it shows on your face. Don't stare at the child because he's trying his best to control himself in a situation and having everybody's eyes on him and you know, making him feel like he's messing up is probably going to make it worse.
Worse, okay.
So
essentially, it's okay for people to come and ask for offer to help and. Not and don't rush to make judgments, I think, would be the core things. Yes.
Yeah. One more thing I wanna add here, and it's in very general, but it's you know, it's very, very upsetting to me, and I think for most of the parents who have kids with special needs, when they find out and they hear the words, "How do you do it? I could never do it," you know, and I just wanna smack that person's face instead of, you know, saying something nice. And I'm being very honest here. So, you know, we are doing the best we can in this situation. And if you were in that situation, you would do that too.
Exactly.
So
it's your child.
It is your child. And if you wouldn't do it, who would? So
please, you know, do not say that, that, but oh, how do you do it?
Well, you know, let me put myself in that those shoes for a minute and say that that is maybe simply a way of expressing, it may be a complimentary thing actually, not necessarily an insulting thing, but they're trying to express sympathy. So do you have better words that you would appreciate from somebody who's trying to convey that, I feel your pain? How do you say that?
Then say it that way, that, you know, this is a great job you're doing and, you know, I commend you for that. Instead of saying, if I were you, I wouldn't be doing, I couldn't do it. That's kind of telling me that I'm lucky I'm not in your shoes and I don't have to deal with it. That's the message I get, and that bugs me.
Message heard. So let's take another quick break, and when we get back, we'll talk about a little bit about the planning for the future. Welcome back to Parent Talk. This is Vidya, and I've been talking to Shriya and Nandini about the challenges of parenting children with special needs. In previous segments, we've talked about the family dynamics of that and what kind of support systems are available for parents now. In this segment, I just want to quickly talk about some planning for the future that I think all of us plan for our kids' futures, but I'm sure with special needs, there are some special issues involved. One of the things is guardianship. And I want to ask both of you about that. That have you thought about? Is it something that's important to think about, rather, as an issue of who is going to take care of your child when you're older and you can't do the caregiving? So, Shriya, do you have some thoughts on that?
Yes, and we have started to think in that direction. It's a very difficult decision and a very difficult process to decide and find out, especially when you only have a single child, mm-hmm. Only child. You don't have his siblings to.
And there is a lot of work involved.
And a lot of work involved. So mm-hmm. That's a big thing, and we are still kind of started
exploring
exactly, exploring different options.
Right. Nandini, what about you?
So my son is 18, so obviously we've been, you know, we're slightly further along in the process. We actually had him conserved before he was 18.
What does that mean?
So conservatorship basically means that you have to go to court and mm-hmm. you have to say that he cannot take financial decisions or life decisions on his own. And you actually have to have a lawyer, and you have to prove in the court that he needs to be conserved, and you have to appoint conservators. And in our case, we have me, my husband, and my husband's brother.
Okay.
Till Raghav gets older, who's 14. So that's a process that you actually have to go to court and do it, which we did like a few weeks ago. The other question.
I also want to ask. Actually, that brings up an interesting question. That in your case, you do have your child does have a sibling,
right?
And chances are that the caregiving is going to fall on his shoulders.
No, I don't want that.
Not necessarily. So, what's the thinking behind that? Just share that with us.
Okay, so he's 18. He continues to have services through the school district till he's 22.
Okay.
Right now, we've sort of got him into a school which specializes in transition planning, and my objective is that by the time he's 22, to continue to work on his skills so that he is as independent as possible. So you have a lot of services through the regional center and the school districts to get to that level by the time the kids are 22. You have something called supported living, where the regional center will help you to actually set up your child so that he can live in his own apartment with support.
Mm-hmm.
So you would actually hire people to take care of him. Or you can use group homes and things like that. I mean, this is a really huge topic.
It's a huge topic, and I don't want to go into depth. Question was more to the the sibling doesn't actually get most of the burden on
I
this.
I don't want that. I don't think that's very feasible. I think that in our country we have enough supports and the objective should be to make the young adult as independent as possible.
And it's not fair.
Because, you know, life is hard enough.
Right.
I don't know in the future if my younger son is going to work in New York or Singapore. How is he going to take care of his...
You don't want to limit his
right,
mobility.
So Rishab needs to be able to be independent in the community as much as possible.
One last question, since we seem to be coming to the end of our hour, is that did either of you think of going back to India as a viable option for the future? Because maybe it's cheaper or there are more caregiving options available?
Initially, when we got the diagnosis, our whole idea was to go back to India because this is it. I cannot do it alone. And we kind of started exploring that option when my son was really young.
And then I realized that, you know, living in India with a wheelchair and a motorized wheelchair is not
really
an option.
Not a convenient option.
We cannot give him normal schooling. We cannot give him normal life that, you know, he would get here.
Right.
And so that's
so
not,
an,
not
option
an option anymore, yes.
What about you, Nandini?
Well, when Rishabh got this diagnosis, we were actually in India and we made the choice of coming to this country because we thought this was a place where he would have a better future. And I think I still stick with that.
Mm-hmm.
I actually would like to explore and see what's going on in India. But I think that...
whether the you're not sure yet whether the awareness and the facilities and the...
Right. I feel like Rishabh needs to have a life where he can have a job and he can live independently. I don't see that happening in India right now.
Right now. Okay. But who knows for the future.
Right.
With that, we come to the end of this hour. Thank you both. Thank you, Shriya. Thank you, Nandini. Before we go, I just want to tell our listeners about an event at the Santa Teresa branch of the San Jose Library on April 28th. It's a community outreach program organized by the nonprofit Aram Safe for Kids. At this free event, there are drawing and storytelling competitions for children and essay writing and short film contests for teens. And everybody gets to participate in the Bollywood Dance Workshop. The program will start at 10:30 on April 28th. And you can get more information. And to register, you can visit www.aramsei.org. That's aramsei.org, aramsei.org. Just for information, a fun day to spend with your kids. To listen to this show's recording and past shows, go to indiacc.org/parenttalk. If you have an idea to share, do write to me at radio@indiacc.org. Once again, thank you to my guests, Shriya and Nandini, for being with us today and having the courage to talk about something that is so deeply personal so others can learn from their experiences. The show's producer is Saad Jaffrey and the theme tune was composed by Naren Pradhan. Tune in same time, same place next week for another live show on parenting. Till then, bye-bye.